Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready? Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
Everyone here to the Thriving Marriage Podcast. I'm Heather Choate with Mark Johnston. Mark, how are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful today. How are you doing today, Heather?
I'm doing good. We have some brand new tech and I'm not super tech savvy. So hopefully we are streaming to both YouTube and our Facebook groups. So let us know if you can see and hear us okay. Leave a comment if your spouse is pulling away and you want to know what you can do to stop that and have them want to be with you again. Because today we're talking about biggest mistakes that you can make when your spouse wants out and how to draw them back to you. So before we get to that, Mark, you want to share a client win of the week?
Sure. This one is coming from Jose. He says, for anyone wondering if you should join the coaching program, do it. 2 months in and my wife now communicates with me like when things were good and she's opened up on what caused her to pull away. And she has noticed the changes I've made and is trying to pull me in instead of distancing herself like she has been. It's amazing to see how fast it turned around from her saying she loves me, but is not in love with me, to her now being flirtatious. And she stops just short of saying, I'm not sure what that means. And she stops just short of saying, maybe I love you. I don't know. Glad I found this program.
Awesome. So, Mark, what do you think she's doing right here?
Well, I think this is Jose.
What he's doing right.
With a lot of the cases that are going on, we have a lot of clients that come our way who are really well-intentioned. They want to support their spouse. They want to make them happy. They want to look for solutions. And so a lot of the times what we're doing is we're helping our clients communicate that well and actually help them show it and help them to show it in such a way that their spouse actually trusts them. So I'm guessing here that, you know, since Jose is talking about having joined the program, he's probably doing a lot of those intro, you know, like with the things that we usually work on within the first couple months, like clarifying his narrative, making sure that he's communicating in such a way that like really builds up what we call our home messages. He's probably taking a lot more proactive action. He's, beyond that, just the fact that she's gone from like saying, hey, I don't know if I love you anymore, to being flirtatious, probably means that he started to address like whatever the impossible problem was that made her pull away. That would be like my guess with that big of a shift, and just knowing like what we typically work on in these first months in the program.
Yeah. That's awesome. So Mark, you and I, we talked to dozens. I know I talked to probably 40, 50, upwards of maybe 100 people every single week about their marriage. And you work with our clients and you talk to people in the Facebook group and the YouTube. And we talked to a lot of people about their marriage. In fact, we've helped thousands of people now. And we've seen some very common mistakes. In fact, I would venture to say that most of the people I've ever talked to have made at least one of them. And I'll be the first to say I've made many of these mistakes myself in my almost, how many years am I? I lost, I can't remember, 17, almost 18 years.
I know
years
you and I marriage. Have been married a similar amount of time. I think, I have to think about it now. My wife and I have been married 17 years. It'll be 18 this summer. So
then I'm right behind you. I'm at 17 as well, but you guys are a few months ahead. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm getting not that old, but I have a hard time keeping all the details in my brain. But in our 17 years of marriage, we've seen our ups and downs, right? And we've had a pattern where sometimes he pulls away or I pull away. And so when your spouse is pulling away, it's very easy to go in some down the route of some of these common mistakes. And we just want to say, you know, seeing your spouse pull away is difficult, right? It puts us into fight, flight, or freeze mode often. And it's what we call an emotional trauma. And it's really something that no one really wants to experience, right? And what happens, right, is we become overly emotional. We can tend to just react out of instinct. Sometimes we feel like we're completely irrational and we often make a lot of mistakes as we try to get our spouse to jump back in on and to work on things with us. And so we're going to go into what some of those mistakes are. But Mark, can you relate to this at all? I know that you and Jen, like, you've been married for like 17 years and you guys seem amazing, but can you relate to any of these mistakes that people are making that we all tend to make when our spouse pulls away?
And I think that's one of the things, you know, like I personally can do is I can see like whereas I might not be going like full blown pulling away from my wife and asking for divorce, you know, somewhere along the, you know, different points within my marriage, those kind of thoughts have crossed my mind. And I can see how people can get into that frame of mind, especially if things got a little bit more extreme. And so I see shadows of this within myself or with my wife. I can see a lot of these things within just general behavior for many problems, not just relationship problems. I think it's a big factor with how do people tend to react when there's a high amount of stress and they're facing some potential loss in their life.
Right. I know I can relate. When Ben pulls away, it freaks me out and I'm like, come back to me. And so sometimes we can go into, you know, I'll make demands. He needs to talk to me about things. I can push him to try to resolve things. I'll try to push him to open up about things. And that just gets me into more fear mode because no one likes to be pushed into doing things or being told they need to change. Or if you already don't want to talk about something, then your spouse saying we should talk about this doesn't make them any more willing to talk about it. And so we're going to go into some of those very common mistakes that we've made and crucial mistakes that can potentially drive your partner further away. So you do not make those. In every case, though, simply stopping these actions can create a huge improvement, though, in helping calm things down, helping your partner consider stepping back towards the relationship.
I want to point out, I was looking through some of the answers from our groups. We actually asked this question, like, what are some of the big mistakes to our Facebook groups and whatnot? And I found it really interesting. I don't know if you saw the theme there, Heather. I was seeing a lot of people claim that it was like a mistake to stick around or to try to work on things or to stay in the relationship. And why I found that interesting, now I might be a little bit biased because, you know, in our line of work, this is what we do, is we encourage people to stick around and work on things. I think I like to take a look at that and adjust that frame of mind just a little bit. I imagine a lot of these people who regret, someone said, like, trying to save my husband from himself or staying around, like a lot of those people, it's more because in the process of staying, they probably made some other mistakes, like losing themselves or not having appropriate boundaries or, you know, perhaps ignoring some of the big problems, trying to continue sweeping them under the rug. I don't think it's ever really necessarily a mistake to try and make things better. But when we start to cross those lines and it becomes a little bit unhealthy, I think that is probably a little bit more what those people are expressing. Now, I don't want to pretend to say that I can get into these people's minds and I'm going to tell them how their life is, but that was just kind of my thought as I read some of those answers.
Yeah. And I come at it with a lot of empathy as well, because it's becomes very unrewarding when you keep trying. I mean, the theme that I got from their comments was like, I tried this, I tried to trust again, and I was proven a fool for doing so, or I tried to fix them, or I tried this and that. And so I regret trying. And it, at the same time, you know, it can be very unrewarding and very exhausting and heartbreaking to try and to fail. But what we help people do is to live their life with no regrets and to do it in a way that doesn't feel like it was all for naught. In fact, my very favorite thing about what we do is helping people learn the skills that they just simply didn't have before and to learn how to process through their emotions so that they become calm, centered, true to who they really are. And they're not grasping at straws, right? It's exhausting when you go about it in the way that's going to push them further away. Like, that would be a fool's errand. And we are not here to give you a fool's errand. We're here to show you what actually works when you do it the right way. So if you're open-minded about that, then this is absolutely for you, because most people are not doing it the right way, which was why they don't get great results, which is why they're like, why did I keep trying? So we want to put that to rest and let you know that when you do things in a new way, you're going to get some new results. And that's exactly what we see happen in our clients' lives every single day. So some of the biggest mistakes, I'm going to do a quick rundown, Mark, before we go into the deeper ones here, because you guys have heard me say this before. If you followed me at all, followed us here at All High Thrive Coaching, I always talk about this in the masterclass, on YouTube shorts, everywhere. Demanding, manipulating, pleading, getting into desperation, or freezing. These are some of the most commonalities that we see. I'm actually not going to go deep into those today because Mark has some really awesome insights on some of these other ways of looking at these things to help you go even deeper into them. But the whole basis is that it's all really about fear. You're afraid, you're in fear and desperation, and so you tend to react or tend to behave out of instinct, and then it only pushes your spouse further away. That instinct is normal, but it doesn't mean it's the only option that you have. Okay. Just because we have an instinct about something doesn't mean that's our destiny, right? We are all higher reasoning beings than that. But what's really important to know is to be aware of where your fear is coming from, and then to choose to get out of that fear and create what you really want to have. Is this resonating with you guys? Leave a comment. Let me know. What are some of the biggest mistakes you feel you've made? What are some of the things that you've done, and why do you think they may haven't worked up until now? So with that bit of a preface, let's go deeper into demanding. All right. Sometimes we want to force our spouse to do things. And one of the big mistakes that we see is demanding apologies. So Mark, what have you seen with this?
Sure. And like you were saying, Heather, there's a lot of there's a lot of mistakes that can be made when these big issues are going on within a relationship. I think we say this a lot. We don't pretend to say that like our discussions here are comprehensive, as there's so many things to talk about. I mean, as evidence, we're 154 episodes into this, and I still feel like we're always talking about another new little nuance here. But you know, like you mentioned earlier, like being very demanding, and specifically in this case, I'm going to talk about demanding apologies. But you know, like this can really cover just about any form of demanding behavior. I see it a lot. Like you see someone engaging in an affair, or they are not performing the parental duties well. Maybe they've stopped paying the bills or something, or maybe you're just worried about where they're gonna go with the relationship and you just want them back. All these things, you might say, okay, like it warrants calling your partner out. And most, you know, if things were going well, that would be appropriate. And I would say in many of these cases, like a lot of these problems should be resolved, and you'd be right to try to resolve them. And in many of these cases, you may even be wronged. Your partner probably should apologize for these things. But if your partner is pulling away, if they're moving towards ending things, or if they're really having a lot of doubt in the relationship, then very likely they're not looking at their mistakes and saying, okay, well, how do I fix this? What have I done wrong here? I do think that inherently the frame of mind in that sort of person is, it's a little bit more of a focus on self. And so if you start saying, well, what about me? What about me? You know, I've seen it over and over and over again where they're like, well, you're just being selfish. And I have to beat my head against my desk here for a moment, because I'm like, well, that's what you're doing too. And I get that. But I do think that like a better route to fixing things is like we do need to have a little bit of focus on calming things down first before we can get some cooperation. And oftentimes that does take someone being the bigger person and taking a little bit of time to put a little bit more of the spotlight on the other, like your partner's concerns. A little bit less on how you are hurting, and a little bit more on trying to create some some common goals here. But I do. I'm sorry, what?
Sorry, I thought that was a break. You go ahead, finish your thought.
Oh, you know, I'm just saying here that with a lot of this, it is, you know, they're looking on how to solve their own problems, and they're looking on how to resolve their own fears and concerns. And I think a lot of people in that space don't really have much of a capacity to entertain some demands on them.
I'm so glad that you brought that up, because I was like praying and meditating on this podcast, because I talk about this a lot. In fact, it's probably the number one thing I talk about with people as I do the masterclasses and stuff with them. And what's really important to note is that right now your spouse, they are being selfish. They are. They're thinking about self. Yes. They're saying, I want a divorce. I want a divorce. I'm in love with someone else. I love you, but I'm not in love with you. I'm happier over here. They're thinking about themselves, and you are right. They are selfish. And so are you. Because you're thinking about yourself. You want to get them back. You're begging, you're demanding, you're pleading. All of those fear-based emotions are focused on one thing: protecting you, helping you feel safe and secure in the relationship. So my friends, if that's the equation, one selfish person, your spouse, one selfish person, yourself, is that the recipe for a good relationship? That's the recipe of not a relationship, right? If we took any marriage, Mark, if your wife was completely focused on herself and you were completely focused on yourself, is that a good relationship?
No, it's not going to really go anywhere. It's not why we get into that relationship in the first place.
Exactly. Because we want to be able to have this relationship where we take care of each other. Mm-hmm. And so one plus one selfish people is not going to equal turning your marriage around. It's going to take one of you, which in this, giving you a big hint here, it's going to be you. If it's going to be anyone, it's going to be you, which is not fair. I know that you have to choose not to be selfish here, but it's what actually needs to happen. You have to learn to become a little unselfish while still respecting yourself, still having healthy boundaries. I'm not saying become a doormat. You are not a doormat, but you do need to be the one willing to give some empathy, some understanding, and some perspective of what the other person is going through. Otherwise, one selfish only going to equal divorce. That's going to be the divvying up of assets, the custody battles, all of that. You know where that goes. But for some reason, when we're in it, we just get so caught up in those emotions that sometimes we can't see it for what it really is. So that's why it helps to have an expert like Mark and I and the coaches here. We can see it for what it is. We can say, hey, when you're focused so much on yourself and you're demanding that they apologize and you're demanding that they should change and that they need to resolve things, that is not communicating a whole lot of respect or understanding to what your partner's wanting. And like Mark said, what we want to do is create some common goals. Common goals. And yes, there are some, even if you feel like there's absolutely nothing you have in common and nothing that you want, there are, and we will help you find them. Okay. When you create those common goals, now it isn't just what I want, what you want, and we're just pulling apart. It's now what we're working on together. And it's going to start with very small things that both parties can agree to and can feel comfortable with. And then that will then increase to other levels of commitment as the relationship heals and progresses.
All right. Should we move on to the next?
Yeah.
Yeah. So this one, it's, you know, I listed it as claiming things are fine, but it's really about dismissive attitudes or like a furthering of trying to like perpetuate old patterns of sweeping things under the rug. Now, why I want to talk about this is like, just because we're not demanding apologies doesn't mean that you have to pretend that everything is fine. I think that's a big problem, especially, this goes in two different directions. Whether you were saying, no, there aren't really any problems, husband or wife, you know, like you don't really need to worry about this. Or on your end, if you're like, you know, it's fine that you're swearing at me and you are calling me names as you are leaving. It's fine. I just want everything to be fine. I want to work things out. Like neither one is really a good stance to take when you're trying to fix things. And I see this a lot. I see like many clients who are trying to fix things, and they're trying to be nice, and they're trying to present some solutions, and then their partner is being terrible to them, and they're like accusing them of so many things that they're not doing. They're calling them names, they're using inappropriate language, they're being very disrespectful, and it doesn't help anyone to pretend like that's okay. You know, it's a hard thing to balance trying to have a little bit more of a focus on your partner's concerns and having some self-respect and having some boundaries. And at the same time, not dismissing what theirs. It's like all this balancing. I'm imagining you've seen like those images of people trying to spin plates, and they're trying to keep all the plates up in the air. And that's what it kind of feels like sometimes to me. Like, here are all these different things we have to pay attention to when the relationship is falling apart. And I think this is another one of those things. You have to really be careful with the balance.
However, I am going to say, though, when you know where you're going and you know what your destination is, because you say, okay, I've decided this is the kind of relationship I want to have. Yeah. This is where I want, my love life to be. Then you're able to have that more forward focus that helps you navigate through those challenges and the different things you have to work through, because you know where you're going. If you're just looking at the plates spinning, I know I would drop every single one of them, right? Actually, I don't think I could do it even looking forward because I don't have that much, but we'll use the race car analogy. Race car analogy is, don't look at the wall if you don't want to hit the wall. But so many people are looking at the wall and then they go right into the wall. So focus more on what you are wanting to create than what you are wanting to avoid. And at the same time, like, don't just have your head in the sand concerning these problems or their problems. Like, that is not real. And I think this falls into the camp of the work on yourselfers. I just coined that phrase, selfers, that they think they can just be like a better version of themselves and somehow that's going to fix everything. And the reality is that working on yourself is good. You will become more attractive and have a better life. But there are still specific solutions that need to come in place concerning the relationship and the behaviors that your spouse may be doing. So I think that's really wise to be aware of both ends of that spectrum there.
I was just talking to someone,
focusing on where you want to go.
I was just talking to someone the other day, and they were saying to me, like, I don't know why my husband is saying that everything's terrible. Like, haven't I been a good wife? Haven't I done all these things for him? Like, how, it was kind of this attitude of like, how dare he have any complaints? And that's a little bit what we're talking about here as well. Like, there's a lot of different aspects of this sort of mistake. And the big issue with this is, like, if your partner is at that point where they're saying, well, do I really want to be in this relationship still? A lot of their internal beliefs that they've been building up over time, a lot of the feelings that they have are probably saying to themselves, no, this isn't okay. And if you just say, if there's just indignation and if there's like this defensiveness around that, it is that kind of sense of I'm sweeping things under the rug, we're dismissing the concerns, and it's going to really further that sense that the problem is impossible to solve. And that's what we're trying to avoid here.
Yeah. In fact, I'm seeing some of the comments coming in about some of this idea of the impossible problem. And so what do you hear from your spouse? Like, what is the story or the narrative that they've created about you? I'm seeing some that you're telling me too much that you love me and I want you to stop that. Meaning maybe they're thinking you're kind of controlling or you're not respecting their needs. I'm seeing other ones that, you know, you never really address the issues. Some stories about witchcraft to try to get her back, being an addict on marijuana, you know, all kinds of stories, right? And so our spouse often creates what Mark has termed here an impossible problem, and that the impossible problem has no solution. Therefore, it's an excuse or a justification for them to leave or to do what they're doing. And so what we want to do is understand what their story or their narrative is, and help them see that there is a solution to that impossible problem, because it's not really impossible.
All right, should we go on? The next mistake here, neglecting yourself. And what I'm talking about here is that, you know, I think there is some tendency with some people to focus so much on soothing and resolving everyone else's concerns when there is a lot of trouble, to the point where they are neglecting themselves. And I think that this can sometimes contribute to this idea that problems are impossible. In a sense that, like, if that the solutions sometimes seem fake or they're not sustainable. If someone becomes like overly accommodating, they're not like meeting their own needs. I've seen time and time again that like are those sort of situations, the partner who's pulling away doesn't believe that that is a real sustainable solution that can be kept up. And so they say, I don't trust this. It's just going to go back to the way it was. I don't think that you're really changing. You're just trying to like temporarily get me back is the big concern here. But even beyond that, like it's just not healthy to push so much to fixing a relationship and forgetting your own needs, focusing so much on someone else. It just at a certain point that just isn't healthy anymore. And, you know, like we were just mentioning a little bit ago, you know, having a little bit of focus on yourself makes it a lot easier for you to be that happy, healthy person that your partner can be attracted to. But yeah, like this is a very common mistake, especially with those personality types that are very giving, a lot very other oriented, is this tendency to forget themselves. And we don't want you guys to do that. Thoughts on that, Heather?
Absolutely. I see this happen a lot. And this isn't like necessarily a stereotype, but I often see this, especially with affairs. When there's a, you know, the partner is cheating on you and then you just tend to try to do everything you can to like get them back. And I see a lot of people just like putting all their needs down to try to win them back and to be the person that they want their spouse, you know, spouse wants them to be and all those things. And so they really start to neglect a lot of their own self-care and they become really consumed with the situation. It applies to a lot of other situations as well, not just affairs. But I tend to get into this myself with my own personality type or whatever you want to call it. But when my relationship is struggling, it tends to take up the entire window of my focus. And it's really, really hard to think or do anything else. So in times when there's been tension or conflict between Ben and I, there's been broken hearts or broken promises, that's all I can really think about. I'm not present with my kids. I'm not able to do very good work. I'm definitely not creative and I don't feel very healthy because it's so hard to think about anything else. And I know a lot of you guys can relate because I've heard you talk about that. In fact, you know, leave a comment. That sounds familiar, right? It's like, you can't focus at work. You can't hardly sleep at night. And so it just becomes like a black hole. It's just sucking your soul dry. And so one of the most healthy things that you can do is realize I am in charge of my own thoughts and my own feelings and my own behaviors. Is this where I really want to be? Is this really serving me to continue to obsess about this, to over worry about this, and to give control where I don't have control? I know for me, I tend to do a little exercise. I'll just give this to you guys if it's helpful. If not, throw it out. I don't care. But just on a piece of paper, with a line down the middle, what I can control, like what's worrying me, I just write it all out. And then I divide it into two categories. What can I control here? What can't I control? I cannot control that my husband won't talk to me right now. That goes in the, I can't control that. I can control how I feel about that and what I choose to do about that. I can control how I'm going to spend my evening. I can control how I'm going to talk to my kids, right? And then create some plans on the things that you can control to take some positive action. It's going to help shift your focus from the wall that we don't want to hit. Remember, the race car driver doesn't want to hit that wall. Can't focus on all the things you can't control. Focus on what you can control. Deepening your breathing, choosing where you're focusing. What positive steps can I take right now? As you do that and help shift your emotions and helps you get on a momentum of more and more positive actions. And you do need to make sure that you are tending to yourself. And so, yeah, it's going to make you feel better and it is going to help you be more attractive to your spouse because you have a life and you aren't looking to them to solve everything. You aren't looking to them to change. You aren't really looking to them to fix everything. You're doing what you can do to get yourself to a good, healthy place. Okay. All right, let's go on to neglecting difficult conversations. And I hear this one a lot. In fact, I call this one the freeze mode. It can be an element of freezing, of not knowing what to do, not knowing what to say. Sometimes you end up saying nothing. Sometimes I hear that, like, oh, I had the perfect opportunity to tell her or to invite her, and I just froze. I couldn't do it. It was too hard. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to say. And this is a really big one, especially for a lot of people who tried to talk about things and it didn't go well. It becomes even more scary to try again.
Yeah, what I find interesting about this is I feel like this sort of behavior, when I see this in crisis situations, it kind of indicates to me that very similar behaviors are likely going on even in calmer times, just to a different degree. Basically what I'm saying here is, you know, like if I see this a little bit, I can fairly accurately make some guesses that this is going on in other areas of the relationship, and very likely is a contributing factor to the current crisis. You know, like the people who say, you know, like, oh, you know, I wanted to say this, but I didn't, or, you know I need to have this conversation, but I didn't. It's all these patterns that keep happening over and over again. And my observation here is that there's a lot of little things that keep the couple stuck in these patterns. Like there's probably a very good reason why you might not be having certain conversations with your spouse. You know, perhaps they get really upset, or perhaps, you know, as you try to talk about some solutions, they shift to some blame or they talk over you. And so there's all these like behaviors that kind of suck you back into these like spiraling patterns, and it's difficult. But like I said, I do think that this is likely a contributing factor to why problems keep happening and why it keeps getting worse. And it, going back to that concept of the impossible problem, very likely contributes to that, the sense of that there is no solution and there's nothing that can be done because nothing is being done because the needed conversations aren't happening. So I do think that like many couples would really, really benefit from being able to competently have those difficult conversations that they've been putting off, whether like that is getting some support from a professional to like really encourage one person to make those things happen, or, you know, attending some couples therapy. I know a lot of you would probably like that to happen, and just your spouse is being a bit resistant. But I do think that, you know, just about every case that I see could do with a little bit of an extra dose of courage, moderated courage, not just being blunt and being like hitting it with a hammer, but like, you know, a little bit dose of courage and addressing those issues that they have a little bit of fear in addressing. I don't know. What do you think about that, Heather?
Yeah, I agree 100%. It is taking ownership of your own personal power, mm-hmm. and focusing again on where you really want to go. So leave a comment if you feel like this is part of a pattern that you're in, right? Maybe avoiding or neglecting difficult conversations. And if it's not your pattern, then that's okay, because we see a lot of different patterns. And that's one of the things that you want to do in step one, is to interrupt those patterns. First, we identify what the patterns are, because sometimes you don't even know. You're just so used to it, just the way that things have been. And maybe they've been that way for weeks, months, you know, years, sometimes even decades, that you don't even realize that's just a pattern. It's not you and it's not your spouse. It's just this way that you've gotten used to doing things. You know, maybe they come home and they're really cold and distant, and so you try to push them to talk about things and they snap at you, and then that makes you defensive, and then you snap back at them. And then pretty soon it's just this bigger thing. That could be a pattern that you're in. Any pattern, maybe checking on their phone because you're worried about who they saw, and then they get all defensive because you're checking on their phone, right? And your fears keeps coming up. So what we help you do is look at what are some of those fear-driven patterns. Sometimes they're even positive things that you think are going to be the solution, but they're actually backfiring, right? Sometimes being overly apologetic or overly over the top with text messages and sending her flowers and sending him pictures of your wedding day and all of these things, you don't realize that this pattern is actually aggravating the problem. And so what we help you do is pattern interrupt. Not only will it start to get you different results because you're doing new behaviors, it's going to get your spouse's attention and help them hit what we call that pause button, so they no longer want to pull away anymore. They'll just pause and consider the possibility of being with you. Now, the last one that we have here is getting stuck in the blame game. And this is really a huge one when we're pointing fingers at our spouse. And we go into a lot of victimhood mode here, right? It's your fault. You're doing this to me. You should honor your marriage vows. You should not be having this affair. You're the one that's hurting me. How could you do that? Mark, what do you see with the blame game?
Well, a lot of what this blame game, some similar behaviors, we see a lot of, defensiveness. You know, I'm thinking of Gottman's Four Horsemen. It's very much that sort of idea there. It's getting stuck in this cycle of, well, you know, I'm being blamed and I'm going to defend myself and blame them for that same problem. So other versions of this are keeping score or just being dismissive of your partner's concerns. And I can see that's really easy. You know, if my wife came at me and said, well, you know, I'm trying to think of a random problem. You know, why are the kids all hungry? Where's dinner at? And I might be thinking to myself, well, you could have done this too. You know, you could have taken care of that responsibility too. And if we escalate that to like a really big problem, like, well, why is our marriage falling apart? Well, you could have done something about this. And then my wife might blame me back and so on and so forth. It's all of this just kind of gets you stuck. It doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't talk about solutions. It's just this kind of sense of, I don't want to be responsible for this, so I'm going to push that responsibility elsewhere. It's really kind of self-defeating. It's within psychology, there's this concept of locus of control. Like, where do you perceive control is in your life? And I'd say, like, the more you do that, the more you push responsibility of problems and your circumstances on other people, the more powerless you feel, the more helpless you feel to solve those problems. And so 100%, I do think that the defensiveness, blame, all that sort of stuff really contributes to this loss of hope and this idea that nothing can be done to save the relationship. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit. Like, why do you think, Heather, how does this lead to that loss of hope? Can you kind of get into the head of someone if there's a lot of back and forth with blame and defensiveness? Where does that really take a relationship?
Yeah. In fact, I saw a lot of this in the comments. It was like, they need to change. They shouldn't be cheating on me. If they would only do this, then I would be able to be happy. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where most of us view relationships. And I would say that comes even from early childhood on. And that's a very pervasive mentality in our culture and our society at large. So it's not only just that we're personally trying to protect ourselves, but we've been kind of conditioned to view the world that way. You know, you may have had a mom that complained a lot about the behavior of her husband, right? Your father. He was always late from work. He didn't pay attention to the kids. He was always demanding or controlling, or, you know, so you heard this negative story from maybe someone very close to you about, it's not my fault, it's their fault. And this goes right back into what you and I call, not you and I call, but we've talked about before, the drama triangle. We didn't invent it, but we've talked about it a lot. And that's the victim role, is that I'm not to blame, the persecutor is to blame. And everyone needs to save me and pity me and oh, poor me, and there's nothing I can do. And if you feel like there's nothing that you can do, why would you have any hope for anything being different, right? And not only does it lead you to a sense of hopelessness, it's also an out, because then you don't have to be blamed for what you've done. You don't have to step into accountability for your own part. You don't have to change. Everyone gets to pity you and take care of you. And, you know, you sign the divorce papers and there's like, I haven't even heard over in Australia, they're having divorce parties. I'm not sure if that's true. Wow. So if you're from Australia, let me know. But I was just interviewed by a podcast host in Australia, and she was talking about how friends in her circle have divorce parties. It's almost this culture of celebrating the destruction of the family. Okay. So we've got a lot going against us when we allow ourselves to believe that mindset and that perspective. It gives us an out. It gives us attention. It gives us like, I don't have to look at myself, because it's very easy to like blame you for my pain than to look at myself and be like, I caused pain. I caused you pain. I caused myself pain. I'm willing to take accountability for that. That is hard. Many people don't want to do that. So yeah, if it's not your fault, then you don't have a lot of hope of changing it. And it's going to take you to connect with who you really are to say, I did this. This is my part in what happened here. I'm taking accountability and responsibility for it. And I'm going to change and improve myself so that I can help heal the situation. That takes someone, to me, of character and courage to be willing to do that. But that's when you find that you're free of the anxiety that victimhood causes. If you're always blaming someone else, you are not a very secure feeling person. The world is scary, it's too big, and you want someone else to fix it. And you never, ever really feel safe. So if you want to create safety in your life, it has to start within you, because it's not about what anyone or anything around you is. Those external circumstances is not where you're ever going to find acceptance, peace, true love, like true joy, true security. All of those things have to come only within yourself. So you have to be willing to go deep and look at that.
All right. I think, any last thoughts on this? I know you've been calling you after you just shared some last thoughts, but.
No worries. Yeah, no, I just think it's really important. And if you guys just want to leave a comment and say any of these mistakes that you feel like you have made, just be really aware of that. And I know a lot of people have a big aha moment. They're like, oh, I am doing that. Kind of feels like getting sucker punched, but we do it with a lot of love, because if you want to heal, that's your primary desire, is to have a good relationship and to feel good yourself. Then sometimes it takes a sucker punch to help wake you up and get there. And I know I've been sucker punched many times, and it's always been for my better good and helped me become a better person myself. So just know that there are things that you need to stop doing if you want to get your spouse back. And just by stopping a lot of these really negative behaviors, the demanding, the pleading, manipulating, freezing, blaming, demanding apologies, neglecting things, neglecting yourself. Just by stopping those things, it's going to reduce a lot of that tension and stop the damage before we can start to heal things. So just stopping those things is going to go a long way. But then, as Mark knows, and we teach you here, you have to start doing the right things. They're going to help your spouse want to talk to you, to feel safe with you, to want to work on things with you, to take those steps and those actions towards you, and for you both to build a healthier and more functional marriage going forward. So with that being said, let's go to our marriage myth buster. This one is, once you're married, you shouldn't have to work at it anymore.
Now, we always take these sort of statements or myths from comments that we see, or from clients that we've worked with. I think the idea behind this is more that if you have to work on things, then the relationship isn't right for you. It's, I think, even further kind of a background belief that like there shouldn't be problems within a relationship. But I want you guys all to know, did you know that roughly 50% of couples go through therapy at some point, sometimes multiple times? Now, this doesn't even take into account the amount of couples that should go to therapy, but never do. Why I'm pointing that out is like, it's a healthy thing to work through problems. I would say for my wife and I, we've had some problems in our relationship, and just the process of learning how to resolve those sort of issues with my wife, if anything, has made our relationship stronger. It helps us to feel confidence that if problems were to come up, you know, we know that we have the tools, that we know that we have each other's back, the tools to solve things, and we know we have each other's back. So like, essentially, it seems almost like it's assumed that any long-term relationship will experience some amount of hardship at some point in their time together. That's just how things work, because you didn't marry the exact same person as you. You're not going to share all the same opinions. And, you know, at that point, I believe that couples have two options. You know, option number one is they could ignore those problems and hope that they just go away on their own. Hint here, they probably won't. It might seem like it for a time, and it might seem like you can push things down and ignore for a time, but almost always, you know, if given enough time, it will bubble out, in my opinion. The second option is, you know, work things out. And like I said earlier, it should be seen as a positive thing when couples decide to go through the process of working out those big issues in their relationship. I do think that most every couple that we talk to, the ones that end up feeling like the ones that end up actually resolving things, quite often describe their relationship as so much stronger because of the work that they do. So I'm going to say that this is absolutely false, that once you're married, you shouldn't have to work on things, because over and over and over again, I see that the healthiest, the happiest couples are the ones that actually do work on their relationship.
I agree. And Ben and I have gone to counselors and coaches as well. And I am so grateful that we have, because you guys may have heard me say this before, but you cannot read the label when you're inside the bottle. You're so close to your marriage, to your spouse, that you cannot read the label on your bottle. We're all inside the bottle of our own marriage. And it really does take someone from the outside that knows how to read the label on your bottle, how to diagnose what's really going on, and prescribe the right treatment plan for you so that you get the result that you want to have for your specific relationship. And so if you want us to read the label on your bottle and have a free one-on-one conversation about that, just leave a comment, say label on my bottle, and we will reach out to you in private messenger if you're here on Facebook, or we will connect with you if you are on YouTube or any other platform so we can have that conversation and identify what's really going on for you, prescribe that treatment plan to get you the results that you want. If your spouse has yet to hit the pause button and you feel like, I'm trying these things, I stopped doing these things you said not to do, and I'm still not getting anywhere, then leave a comment and say pause button. And we'll show you how to get your spouse to hit the pause button within just a few weeks from now. It's incredibly powerful and it's worth getting there. If anything in you is saying, I want to know if I gave my marriage every chance possible, it's worth it. To me, it's worth everything. Another interesting thing I think about this, Mark, is that think about how much money people spend on weddings. Exorbitant amount of money on weddings. And how much money do they actually invest into the maintenance and the health and strength and longevity of that relationship? I think we've got it all backwards in our culture. I do. We celebrate so much this like wedding events when we know that like over 60% of them are going to be divorced within 7 years. That's crazy to me. So I think we need to focus more on what it takes to have a healthy long-term relationship and less focus on the honeymoon, butterflies, cloud nine lie that's really been sold to us about that whole part of the marriage, because that's not what a relationship really is. And let's make sure that we prioritize in ourselves where we're putting our time, our energy, our money, our focus. Is that really what's going to allow a healthy, functional relationship to be nurtured, to withstand the storms of life? Because they're going to come. If they haven't yet, and I don't think that's you, because you're not, you know, you're listening to this podcast, so you have faced some storms, you are facing some challenges, but if you haven't, they're going to come. So are you going to be ready for them? Are you going to have someone in your corner helping guide you and show you how to get through it? If not, then seek for that help now, because there are solutions and there are things that you can do to get there. So thank you guys so much for joining us today. Mark and I, we really strive to give you our very, very best, because you mean a lot to us and we know how much your relationship means to you. These decisions that you're making right now are crucial. They are life altering, not just for you, but for your children, your friends, your family, even generations to come. So we hold that as a sacred responsibility, and we are here to help you every step of the way. So thank you guys for joining us today. Next week, we're going to be sharing with you 3 habits for a healthy relationship, which is going to be fun, because now we're going to go more into what to do to create that healthy relationship you're really wanting. Thanks for joining, Mark, and we'll talk again soon.
See you, everyone.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.